Coming up on Tech News Today, Microsoft announces the new Xbox, Apple faces the tax man, and Yahoo's attempting to revive Flickr. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, May 21st, 2013. Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, or online store. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to squarespace.com and use offer code TNT5. And by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial. Buy one desk phone, get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting each time with the top 10 stories of the day in the news feed. Durango has been unchained. Microsoft announced the first details on their new game console, the Xbox One, today. The Xbox One comes with an x86 processor, 8 gigabytes of RAM, USB 3.0, Wi-Fi Direct, Blu-ray, a 500 gigabyte hard drive, and HDMI pass-through that lets you control your cable TV box. Microsoft also announced a partnership with the NFL for Xbox One and a live-action Halo series involving Steven Spielberg. More details will come at Microsoft's E3 press conference on June 10th.
Flickr has dropped its Flickr Pro pricing tiers in an effort to compete in a very crowded market of free online photo space. Flickr has new ad-free tier, appropriately called ad-free, for $49.99 per year, and a tier for power users called Doubler, priced at $499 per year. Doubler users get one extra terabyte of space in addition to the 1 terabyte that everyone already gets as free as part of a Yahoo account.
A new report from the American Customer Satisfaction Index says that people just aren't as happy with their iPhones as they were last year. In 2012, 83% said they were happy with their iPhones. In 2013, that number dropped to 81%. Samsung experienced the largest positive change. 76% said they were satisfied, which is up 7% from last year. On the ISP front, the report also noted that Verizon Fios users are the happiest, while Comcast was ranked dead last.
Wow, no wonder I'm so much happier. I moved from Comcast land to Verizon. Amazon just got FedRAMP accreditation to add to its government acronym collection next to its FISMA moderate. You wonks out there know what all this means. For us mere humans, here's the scoop. The FedRAMP certification came courtesy of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, which uses AWS to run the CDC's Big Sense program. Once you get FedRAMP security ranking from one agency, it then becomes easier to get contracts from other government agencies.
You know what I'm thankful for? The fact that all of our Skype messages are protected by end-to-end encryption.
Thank goodness.
Well, no, actually think again, because Skype regularly scans message contents for signs of fraud. And company managers may log those results indefinitely, reports Ars Technica. This happens if Microsoft converts the message into human-readable form at will. So how do we know they're doing this? Well, Ars, along with a security researcher, used Skype to send 4 web links as a test. 2 of them were accessed by a machine with an IP address belonging to Microsoft.
A United States congressional investigation says that Apple and the country of Ireland brokered a deal whereby Apple would pay a tax rate of 2% of its Irish taxable profits. Ireland's European Affairs Minister Lucinda Creighton says there is no such deal, there is no deal for any company to pay 2% corporate tax in Ireland, and that all companies in Ireland pay the standard 12.5% tax rate.
Bloomberg reports Dish has offered $2 billion for LightSquared's wireless spectrum. All right, seems simple enough. LightSquared was the company that planned to provide satellite LTE service to the U.S., but was shut down by GPS concerns. Dish, however, is also bidding on Clearwire and fighting SoftBank to buy Sprint. Meanwhile, to make the Spectrum Love Triangle complete, Sprint just upped its offer for Clearwire to $3.40 per share. That's 10 cents higher than Dish's Clearwire bid. And Sprint already owns 50% of Clearwire. So hope that's clear.
Google will retire its checkout payment processing tool on November 20th. And not surprisingly, any retailer using checkout needs to choose a different payment processing platform. Checkout was merged with Wallet last year, and Google said it has partnered with Braintree, Shopify, and FreshBooks to offer discounted options for retailers that haven't yet selected an alternative payment processor. RIP checkout. It was a good 6-year run.
Aww. Hey, remember IBM's Watson, who whooped up on the smartest humans in the land on Jeopardy? Huh? Yeah, in addition to its careers in medicine and banking, that supercomputer may soon help you with your customer complaints. IBM plans to launch the Watson Engagement Advisor to help consumer brands better recommend products to customers and provide better customer service. The product can either assist human customer service reps or interact directly with customers online.
Dell's Project Ophelia will start shipping in July. Now, Project Ophelia is Dell's Android-powered PC that's about the size of a USB flash drive and plugs directly into a display's HDMI port. Inside is Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, so you can get online and control the PC wirelessly. Dell plans to demo the device at next week's Citrix Synergy Conference in Los Angeles.
This episode of Tech News Today brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create a professional website, blog, portfolio, online store, all three at once. It doesn't matter what you got. Go check out Squarespace. They upgraded their platform last fall, and they just will not stop rolling out amazing features. Make sure you get the most from their recent innovation. Squarespace has a 24/7 support team that provides live chat during the week and extremely fast email support throughout the day and night. And I've used that before, so I can attest to that. They get back to you. They actually answer email. Plus, with plans starting as low as $8 a month for software and hosting, Squarespace is a real value. It's exceptionally well designed. They have award-winning templates, and they're not just resting on their laurels. They've got new templates out there. There's a new one called Momentum, which has cinematic full-bleed image display. It's perfect for photographers and designers. There's also a new calendar feature called Events Collection. It allows you to share scheduled updates. So if you've got a band on tour or you're hosting events or you've got sales coming up, anything like that, you can use that. And Layout Engine enables you to customize pages in seconds just by adding blocks of content. It was already easy to use Squarespace. They actually made it easier. Photos, videos, text, social media content, you just drag it in. It's all drag and drop. Of course, that powerfully flexible e-commerce solution that'll let you sell physical or digital goods, connect your social media accounts. Squarespace integrates all your website needs into one platform. Domains, design, development, commerce, hosting, 24/7 customer support. But you don't have to listen to any of that string of words I just said because you can try it out for yourself for free. And no, you out there who's like, well, I'm not giving them my credit card number. You don't. You just sign up for a free account. No credit card needed. Just try it out. Start building your website. Then if you decide to purchase it, use offer code TNT5. You'll probably want to give them a credit card then. But it's worth it because you get 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, including monthly and annual plans. Don't forget about free domain registrations if you go for that annual plan, by the way. That's squarespace.com. Use the offer code TNT5. Everything you need to create an exceptional website. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Joining us now as we're recording the show an hour early. So thanks for joining us a little off schedule. Kevin Purdy, writer for Fast Company, IT World, lots of other sites, and co-host of In Beta with Gina Trapani. Good to have you back on the show, Kevin.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Let's start by talking about the Xbox announcement. Now, for those of you who watched live, you know that we recorded this later, which is why we don't have Kevin Purdy for this part of the show, but he'll come right back. We do have Brian Brushwood, who was on the live coverage on Twit. So, Brian, pretend you're Kevin Purdy. And
yeah,
let's talk
We would do like a morph effect.
The Xbox One, an always on, meaning you just leave it on. You don't turn the power off. Voice activated, comes with Kinect, Windows 8 layout on the tiles. It's got Snap style multitasking. You can use your voice to switch between things. Got that HDMI pass-through we expected, so you control your live TV. And it, It's nice looking too. Ayaz, you got a chance to watch the announcement. What were your impressions of Xbox One so far?
I thought it was quite impressive. The thing is, it's the everything box. It's supposed to be an all-in-one. I thought Microsoft did a heck of a job trying to explain that they're different. They're going to have a bunch of exclusive content. They've got some downloadable content for Call of Duty first. But the thing is, all these next-gen consoles should be as powerful as each other. So they needed to stand out. And I think the fact that they showed off the Xbox itself, which looks like a Betamax recorder, is pretty impressive.
Now, one of the things they tried to do is emphasize this is for the living room. This is the one box. This can do all of your entertainment, not just video games, but movies, control your television. We're going to bring you original series on Halo. A live-action Halo TV series was announced. Also, they announced a partnership with the NFL, which talked about a lot of interactive elements while you're watching games, but they didn't make it clear if there was a direct partnership to watch the games on Xbox or it was just the games you would normally get through your cable channel passing through. And Brian, this balance, you were a little angry at what they announced.
To be clear, they made the right call. They gave the right amount of information, given the fact that E3 is right around the corner. They did enough to stir the hype machine. They gave enough firm answers to please people who were reading about it. But they're being a fan of the Xbox, somebody who, like, I regard the Xbox as my favorite device in my living room. And the fact that they got so close to giving me definitive answers about so many of the things I care about and then didn't go any farther was extraordinarily frustrating. However, I will say that they did a good job of keeping the hype going forward here. Second of all, I want to give major kudos on the name for this. The beforehand, people had been saying that this is going to be the Xbox 720, which was the worst name ever. It means 720 means two things. It either means you're spinning around in circles, going nowhere, or it means the lesser of the two high-definition standards. And the fact that instead they changed it to Xbox One, a name that conveys that this is going to be the one device to rule them all, which, of course, on frame rate, you and I have wanted for years, that was really good news. And the fact that they started off the presentation talking not about games, but instead about how, as a consumer, you're going to be able to quickly and easily switch without hunting for a remote between the television programming that you care about and navigate those crazy Byzantine programming menus just by saying, look, I want to watch Breaking Bad. Just find it for me. Go. Thank you.
Brian, it doesn't bother you at all that Xbox One is certainly not the first product to be called the something one. I almost feel like they didn't try that hard.
I think, to be honest, this is a transition to just having the Xbox be without unit numbers, the way they've done with the iPad, or, you know, where it's like, look, like, you don't say, I got this particular BMW. I guess you do. You say like the 7 Series or whatever. I think they should try to transition to the Xbox just being the Xbox. And this is a good middle step to get you there.
Sarah, do you think that they will appeal to people who maybe play games, but they're not huge gamers, but they really want the entertainment aspect? Is that going to convince somebody who wouldn't have bought an Xbox otherwise to buy the Xbox One?
Well, you're totally describing me. And we talked yesterday. I thought, If the Xbox can be an all-in-one, you know, so I guess the name is good in that sense, all-in-one system where, yes, I could, if I had cable, I could go ahead and route it through a really nice Xbox interface. But you've got original programming, which is obviously very interesting for a lot of people, especially who don't have cable subscriptions. And the fun Kinect stuff where I don't have to be playing a game. And who knows, maybe I'll like that new Halo series, although it doesn't really appeal to me, but hey, maybe it'll be really good. I think this is absolutely the best Xbox yet for something like that. I'm still kind of trying. I guess at this point, it's like I've already got a couple of set-top boxes, right? So at what point do I throw everything away and just have an Xbox? I'm still not there yet, but it certainly seems like Microsoft is going down that road.
When you look at a Roku for $79 or an Apple TV for $99, they are deficient in some categories. They don't have all of the elements. And you compare that to the Xbox One, which we don't know what the price is going to be, but it's likely going to be several hundred dollars. And you have to pay for Xbox Live to get access to a lot of these great features. Mm-hmm. I just don't think this persuades anybody that wasn't going to buy an Xbox already for the video game features to buy an Xbox to be its one box. Now, one hint they made was that they will give more details on the future of the Xbox 360 at E3. So maybe these rumors we were hearing about a second box that's meant just for television could become the Xbox 360 with a software upgrade. But even then, I mean, I guess they could sell that for less than $99, but you still have to pay for Xbox Live. Brian, doesn't that make this all non-comparative to other set-top boxes?
I'll tell you what, man. I don't know how they did it, but Microsoft did the impossible. They convinced people for a decade straight now that the ability to play on game online games is somehow worth $50 in its own right. And I'm somebody who grew up on PC gaming, so it's like the very idea of that should be ridiculous. But instead, like, I start to get mad and then I think, I don't know, their interface is really nice. And I like the fact that it's just always there, ready to go. And I like the way they handle the friends thing. And I guess I do like this thing as well. So if they could continue to do that, all of a sudden that gives them a freedom to price this thing at a totally different level. Because one of the rumors we've heard is that you could get a discounted version of it that if you buy your first year of Xbox Live. And to be honest, an Xbox Live Gold membership was one of those things where it's like once you cross over into that territory, even you don't know why you're doing it, you're just going to continue to pay $50 a year forever after that. And to be honest, that's the business that Microsoft should be in, not just the selling you equipment business.
Do you agree if somebody's a cord cutter and they're cost conscious, $50 is still okay?
I think so in some respects. The thing about the Xbox is not only can it get its own content from the internet and will it have its own original programming, which makes that fee a little bit more easy to swallow, but the fact is the Xbox has been a really good extender for either Media Center or other cable systems, because if you have like a Comcast your ISP or they're your cable provider, you can use your Xbox as another cable box. And because that value proposition is better than renting a piece of crap from your cable company, I think the extra fee that Microsoft is charging or that pricing structure won't be so bad because they offer so much and they seem to have these amazing partnerships that you just can't get. If you're on Roku, that's great and everything, and you don't have to pay a fee, but you can't get access to a lot of the content that Xbox
will. But we can all group Skype around the fire during the holidays.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll tell you what, though, to be honest, like
Blu-rays.
Like I have a lot of traditional friends who don't dig on, you know, cutting the cord or using their cell phones or whatever. They still have landlines. And if like it could be out of this entire thing that the built-in Skype integration is the most disruptive technology in the entire Xbox One experience, because it could be the kind of thing where you always know that this always on device is connected to someone's television. And when you call, you have that landline experience of the entire house lights up with it's like if they're in the house, they're going to answer your question.
I don't think I disagree with you there. And I'm not saying you're crazy. I think you've got a good argument, but I think people are just moving to no landline. They're not going to want to answer the television. They're going to want to answer the phone that's always laying around. I think there will be people like you who are like, no, I want that loud noise. This isn't good enough for me, but I think you're probably in the minority.
So, okay, and that's fine to believe that. But think about not from the perspective of the person who's receiving the phone call, because you're right. There's a lot of things that are annoying from that perspective. But the person making the phone call, like, I want to reach this person. They're notoriously unreliable on their cell phone. This is a way that I can have an alarm go off and not involve a landline on there.
Hey, Dad, that's my friend. Can you stop playing Call of Duty for a second so I can talk to him on Skype?
You won't have to stop. That's the thing. Microsoft showed off the snapping feature that they have in Windows. You can have one window open with your game
Dad,
or whatever you're doing.
Dad, can you quiet down? Your Call of Duty playing is too loud. I can't hear my friend.
Well, that's the point, right? You're going to have this extra Skype thing. I mean, if you had a switch from the game to something else, I think that'd be much worse. The fact that they can put up two applications at once, even though that sounds silly. Of course you can put two applications up at once. It's a computer. But they figured out a way to make it look not hideous, and you'll be able to switch things quicker. Plus, they did say all that voice control stuff of, hey, switch to CBS or switch to the game. So if you can actually have your dad be quiet because you're trying to play, it should be possible if you're able to talk to the Xbox.
Is the command, okay, Xbox?
No.
Okay, Xbox.
It's not.
You're just going to run in and yell Xbox off in the middle of somebody else's game.
Okay, so real quick, before we wrap up here, is there, like, we're seeing things with you know, the OK Glass, the Google Glass, you talk to it. Same thing we're seeing with the Xbox, wants to be a natural voice communication scenario. Does Siri have an advantage in that it at least pretends to be a person? Like, does that matter to any of you guys? Because weirdly, it matters to me a lot, and I really dig thinking of my phone as a person, and the fact that Xbox is not, you know, they didn't mention like introducing Rex, your personal assistant. They didn't do any of that. Like, I wonder how much personality is going to come into all of these virtual assistant services, essentially because they're all modeled on Jarvis from the Iron Man series.
Well, I think eventually it'll be, I mean, you can pick your voice, right? I mean, you might like a nice lady robot, but I think that's almost like, you could make it whatever you wanted to because that would be possible eventually, right?
Do you think people
and you're free to name it whatever you
want. I think it's really
call
about
it Xbox Bob.
If the dang thing works, that's really what I think. Like, Siri's great and it's sassy and everything, but it doesn't do what it's supposed to do. The Xbox looks like, or at least the demos, if they work as good as the demos and it does switch and does everything you want, I don't think you care about the personality, especially if it's giving you what you want.
Yes,
as all long right, as launching fast, around the world later this year. We'll find out more at E3 on June 10th. Brian Brushwood, thank you for turning from Kevin Purdy into Brian Brushwood. We're going to turn you back into Kevin Purdy now.
Good. Let me cast my spell.
Poof. Purdy.
Yahoo had their own announcement last night, not just about Tumblr. What did they have to say, Ayaz?
Yeah, so Yahoo held a big event in New York showing off the new redesigned Flickr. It emphasizes pictures while removing as much white space as possible. Images are displayed in a big grid. Yahoo announced you're going to get 1 terabyte of storage for your photos for free. That's not a promotion. This is the amount of storage you will get if you're a Flickr free user. In the old days, you'd be able to see the last 200 photos you uploaded for free. And if you'd pay, you'd be able to see all of them and get unlimited storage. Now you get 1 terabyte for free. The maximum image size for uploads is 200 megabytes. All users can create collections, post up to 60 group pools, and limit the maximum image size available to others. So a lot of powerful tools coming for free. If you want to give Yahoo money, you can. You can still pay $50 a year, and that removes some of the ads. Excuse me, removes all of the ads from Flickr, and you get access to Flickr analytics. $500 gets you 2 terabytes. So you can either get 2 free accounts, or you can pay $500 for another terabyte of storage. And the Flickr Pro accounts, though, they're no longer being sold as of May 20th, 2013. Existing Flickr Pro users can continue to use the service, or they can migrate to the free account. Now, Flickr Pro users, if you're still a Pro user, you're limited to image size uploads of 50 megabytes and video sizes of 500 megabytes. If you want to upgrade to the larger sizes, you have to convert from a Pro account to a free account. Yahoo also introduced
it. Oh, that makes sense.
So you have to upgrade from a Pro account to a free account.
Sarah. And people are complaining already. They're like, I don't want to have to upgrade to a free account.
There's also, of course, the immediate backlash about the redesign. Kevin, what do you make of this whole announcement?
It's really a pretty huge upgrade, but I guess I wonder how this helps get Flickr into the hands of people who don't already have Flickr accounts, right? Like, there's not a problem with folks watching the show and the hosts and everything knowing what Flickr is and how great it can be, but it feels like the main challenge is getting it into the hands of folks who don't know that that Yahoo has a photo service already.
Sarah, you were a Flickr Pro user. Are you going to switch your account from Pro to free?
Sure I am, Ayaz, because it's a better option. I think that this is really smart, and not just smart, but necessary for Yahoo. I mean, if you think about something like Facebook, well, they don't limit the amount of photos that I can upload. And with the free account on Flickr, which is the reason that I was a Pro user, to be able to be locked out of the majority of my photos in varieties of sets and collections that I've curated over the last, 7 years, always felt somewhat cruel. So I'd pay my $60 a month to be able to look at my own photos that I uploaded. So the new pricing structure makes a lot more sense to me. You do make a good point, though, that it's like, well, you could have 2 accounts, each at 1 terabyte, or you could have 1 account where you pay $500 a month, which is fairly
$500
steep. $500 a year. Yeah, thank you. But still, that's quite a bit of money, unless for whatever reason it makes sense because you're a professional or something like that. But Kevin, I think you make a good point. The account options are better than they were before. But when you look at the new Flickr page, old time Flickr users go, wow, look, the design has really changed. If you've never been a Flickr user, it kind of looks like a lot of other photo services.
Yeah, I guess I feel like the appeal of Flickr is not the size of the back end they can provide or the limitations or anything being removed. It feels like it's differentiating itself. That's the real challenge from, like you said, Facebook, from even now Google Plus just did a huge amount of talk about their photo service at a Google I.O. this year.
I was more excited about the Flickr app when they upgraded it, where it was finally usable. And even if they didn't add a bunch of filters in there, I'm not a big filters guy, so that was fine. But I agree with you, Sarah. I don't think this really catches anybody's eye. And I agree with you, Kevin, that I'm not sure it does anything to persuade someone to move to Flickr. When you look at Facebook and Google Plus, and it's unlimited storage, essentially, or at least on Facebook it is.
And it is on Google Plus, depending on the size. I think it's 2048 pixels, and it's unlimited.
Yeah.
But you, and the big thing with Flickr is like you get a terabyte for free and then you can pay for 2 terabytes. Like, well, for Facebook, I can pay nothing and it's there forever. I think Flickr needs to continue to make its case. And I think it suffered a little bit for being the backup announcement to Tumblr in case the Tumblr acquisition fell through. And so that almost raised it to a little bit of a higher level of hype. And therefore, people are looking at this announcement going, wait a minute, this is your big announcement?
I think another thing about Flickr is, if you want to compare it to Tumblr, and we don't know how the two might be integrated together down the road, but Tumblr has a very strong community. Flickr once had a very strong community as well. There are certainly people who are involved in Flickr communities and various photo pools now, but that number has dropped off so much. If Yahoo can convince people that Flickr is the place to sort of, you know, that Facebook, but just for people who really, really like photos and want to talk about photos and tag their photos and that sort of thing, then they can regain some love, because that was the fun part of Flickr for a lot of people back in the day.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That tie-in to Tumblr is also going to be their video strategy for user-uploaded video, I have a feeling, as well.
Yep.
Let's talk about all this stuff and how it's affecting Yahoo's brand. Obviously, Tumblr and Flickr just announced, so that didn't affect the survey. But Yahoo's making a little bit of a comeback.
Yeah, so there's a top 100 ranking on brands. It's brands with a Z at the end, and the A and the Z are capitalized, you know, like brands A to Z. But anyway, the top 100 ranking is something that people pay a lot of attention to. And guess who made the top 100 for the first time since 2009? That's Yahoo. They're sitting pretty at number 92. But hey, they're in the top 100. And there were a few years where they weren't even in the top 100 at all. The last time that Yahoo made the list in 2009, it had a brand value of $7.9 billion. It now has a brand value of $9.8 billion. So you might say, oh, look at Yahoo. It's coming back. Though its high was $11.4 billion in 2008. So still a bit of a climb. Well, when you talk about top 100 brands, you might say, well, who's number one? I'll give you one guess. Anyone?
Apple.
Yeah, that's right. Apple has a brand value of $185.1 billion, so it sits at number one. Google's ranked at number two, a brand value of $113.7 billion. But you've got other brands, not surprisingly, rising. The Samsung brand rose by 51% to the number 30 spot at $21.4 billion. I don't know. I mean, it's... these are the sorts of things where, Kevin, do you take much stock in top 100 brands and the fact that Yahoo is at number 92 after not being on the list at all?
Well, I assume that it was compiled before Tumblr and before Flickr announcements at Yahoo and before the weather app that everybody loved. So, I mean, that's all Marissa Meyer, right? That's all her. That is her impact on the list and bringing Yahoo back into the top 100. Yeah, I think it's really interesting that they're back in there. I don't know if anyone could tell you what the Yahoo brand is, though, really. I mean, I guess it's a stronger brand, but I mean, I don't have a single sentence about what Yahoo does, like what everyone there is driving toward.
Yeah, I guess coming back AOL into the top 100 is sort of like the potential of your brand all of a sudden sounds more exciting than it was before.
The single executive who can bring them into a smarter brand, I guess, or maybe actually create a brand that people get.
I kind of feel like it's a bit like AOL in that AOL is kind of feeling out their brand by making acquisitions and saying, okay, now we're no longer the ISP. We're about content and gadget, TechCrunch, new content, portals, video. I feel like Yahoo's sort of feeling their way forward by acquisition. They have a sense of what they want to be, but I don't think they can state it yet.
Yeah, Tumblr and Yahoo tie together, and it seems like they're trying to become the company where you share stuff. That's a pretty heavy market too, right? Someone smarter than me can tell you what those two acquisitions mean, one chain after the other. Or I'm sorry, those two, you know, big news events mean.
You know, while we're talking about Apple being number one, there was an American Customer Satisfaction Index report also issued today. Apple has received a score of 81 on a scale of 100. In terms of customer satisfaction, so you say, okay, a solid B, but is a 2% drop from its 2012 position. You compare that to satisfaction with Motorola phones, that jumped 5% from 2012 to 77 out of 100. Samsung posted the biggest gain of all handset makers, up 7% to 76. So, you know, Apple as the brand value of $185.1 billion, sure, that's something. But satisfaction index, and I have to say, my own little home button on my iPhone seems to be dying. And I was on some forums recently, and it turns out it's a very common problem. So I'm not the only one who was less satisfied than I was a year ago. Moving to Samsung.
Nobody's taking you seriously, Sarah. I think the silence right there, everyone freaked out for a second. Is she being serious? No. There's no way she's moving to Samsung.
But no, I seriously am not as happy with my iPhone 5 as I was with my 4S.
Well, that's why you'll get the new one next year. That's the point. The first year, it kind of works great, and everyone's very excited when you do the two-year upgrade. You're like, hey, here's my 5. It's fantastic. And then the button starts getting worn out after a year. You replace it in the second year in 2014. We'll see the numbers go back up.
And lithium-ion batteries drop 20% every year that you use them. So, you know, general sloping curves.
Yeah, I think more and more everyone's got their eyes on the next Apple announcement, whenever, whatever it is, whether it's iOS 7 at WWDC, whether it's, you know, the phone following on sometime later this year. It's becoming a lot more than just like, oh, yeah, it's been a while since a big new event. It's becoming, with all of these little pieces, it's becoming more and more critical for Apple. And I don't think that's good because Apple likes to evolve slowly and they're less likely to blow us away with something.
Indeed.
Let us tell you what they can blow you away with. Tax savings in just a second, but let's thank our other sponsor for today's show, Ring Central. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. We tell you about it all the time. You probably didn't know what a PBX system is until we told you you don't need one. Well, you don't need to know because you don't want one. You want to be able to work in the cloud. You want to have meetings. You want to store documents. You want to do all that stuff. And when Russell, our IT guy, said, look, when you build the new studio, get RingCentral. It's a cloud-based phone system. Leo was like, no-brainer. We love RingCentral. Zero startup costs. None of that PBX hardware to install or maintain, and it allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. With RingCentral, you can get your voicemail and your email. You can get fax messages on your smartphone. If there's that person who just won't move into the future and wants to send you a fax, you can still be okay with them. And now they have a new feature, Business SMS. You can send text messages to customers and colleagues from your business phone number. You don't have to use your personal number. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 a month per user. And you can start right now with a 30-day risk-free trial. And don't forget, they have a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, get a second phone free, up to 20 phones. So call this number designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. Once again, 800-543-9980. Or if you're like, wait a minute, what about the web? You can go to ringcentral.com and use the promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. And we thank them for their support of Tech News Today. All right, Ayaz, tell us how Apple has become number one in avoiding taxes.
Sure, I'll do that. So there was a U.S. congressional investigation saying that Apple has avoided billions in tax by setting up a bunch of companies so complex it spanned continents and went beyond anything most experts have ever seen. That's from the New York Times article discussing this. Some of the subsidiaries had no employees. The main subsidiary is a holding company that includes Apple's retail stores throughout Europe, has not paid corporate income tax in the last 5 years, according to the report. Apple's arrangement has allowed it to pay 1.9% tax on its $37 billion in overseas profits in 2012. International operations last year accounted for 61% of Apple's total revenue. According to the congressional report, Ireland agreed with Apple to give them a lower 2% tax rate for Apple's Irish taxable profits instead of the normal 12.5%. Ireland has come out and said that's not true. There's no such deal. The investigation, by the way, the congressional investigation, found that Apple didn't break any laws, but they questioned the use of all the subsidiaries. Kevin, do you think all of this kind of tax investigation, this kind of press, is this going to hurt Apple's image in the long run?
Not among consumers. I mean, I think they're definitely not the only person doing this. As the New York Times, the original investigation they did showed, it's just that Apple is kind of one of the easiest to understand how they would use that scheme, because people understand what Apple does. They sell products to people who give them money for it. Other companies that are way more complex than Apple use this kind of what's called the double Dutch Irish sandwich or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Yeah. That's a great name.
Yeah, I know it is, because it makes you hungry. But I don't think it's going to hurt Apple's reputation among brands. I do think that it's going to be interesting to see. It plays into a lot of issues that Apple has with ethics of how they get, how they become the most profitable, most efficient company in the world. Manufacturing, smart tax handling, smart revenue banking, you know, that kind of thing. It's a really interesting topic that I have. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out.
Yeah, so Apple's piling up mountains and mountains of cash because they're not paying it out to any countries. They're not paying a tremendous amount of taxation to any particular body. Now, according to a study by the National Bureau of Economic Research, they found that 92% of the repatriated cash was used to pay out dividends. So that's for their shareholders, share buybacks, or executive bonuses. Repatriations did not lead to an increase in domestic investment, employment, or R&D. Tom, do you think Apple has a duty to take that money and bring it back to the U.S. and help the U.S., or is that what they're doing just best for the company?
Well, Tim Cook is on the Hill right now talking to the Senate, saying we are following the laws. In fact, I've got a quote here. He says, we pay all of the taxes we owe, every single dollar. And he's like, you need tax reform. And they do pay taxes. They paid $6 billion of taxes in the United States. And they actually pay taxes overseas for some things. What the controversy is about is that Ireland has a law that says if you're a company that's from somewhere else, you can exempt a bunch of your income and not have to pay Irish corporate tax. And therefore, Apple, which employs, they say they employ 4,000 people. I've read 2,800 people, but they employ thousands of people in Ireland, has an Ireland Irish company that under Irish law doesn't have to pay corporate taxes. And therefore, because the company's in Ireland, they don't have to pay taxes anywhere else. So they don't pay a lot of taxes. The key point for me here is this is all legal. So what everybody's getting upset about is that Apple follows the law in a way that maximizes the amount of money they get to keep. What probably should change is the law that allows them to do this. And as Kevin alluded to, there's this double Dutch Irish sandwich thing that a lot of people do. Apple's out there trying to say, look, we don't loan ourselves money the way HP does. HP does these short-term loans from its overseas divisions that allow it to use the money in the United States without having to pay taxes on it. Apple's like, we don't do that. There's things we could do that are still legal that we don't do. So, I mean, to me, it's all about the fact that Apple is number one in brand, one of the most successful companies. And apparently, like, Rand Paul went on a big rant about how awesome Apple is and criticized the Senate committee he's on. So, yes, should the tax laws allow companies to do this? That's a very good point. Probably shouldn't. And Tim Cook has some ideas on how that would work. Obviously, they're going to benefit Apple, but we should reform the tax laws and not just go after just Apple, because Google, HP, Amazon, they all do this sort of thing.
The other thing is, Tim Cook has mentioned in the past that he wants to bring some production of Mac computers to actually be in the United States. There's been discussions of, you know, money being brought back to the U.S. in general. All kinds of changes need to be done to the laws for this to actually be forced upon a company. Sarah, do you think Apple should, since they're based in Cupertino, should they be trying to bring more money back to the U.S., which has its own struggling economy, or should they be availing themselves of all of the benefits of all these other countries? Because that's what they're doing. The laws are there to bring businesses in, and it's working.
Well, okay. If you want to think about Apple as a company that has a moral obligation to do anything but make as much money as possible, sure. They should be investing more money and research and development into bringing back jobs to the United States. You know, the company's based in Cupertino. They've talked about having Macs made in the U.S. I mean, our own president, when he's up for re-election, said the same thing. But at the same time, they kind of need as much money as possible in order to be able to roll out something like that. So in a way, you could say, sure, they're following the laws. Yeah, you know, they're maximizing their profits. They're not doing anything that is illegal. And perhaps we will see the fruits of their labor down the road when, you know, all of their manufacturing facilities happen in the Central Valley. But I don't see that happening tomorrow or really anytime soon. They're a corporation, and that's what corporations do. I don't think... You know, Apple is any different than any other corporation that's maximizing profits and keeping shareholders happy.
Yeah, Apple's prepared statement for the Senate committee says, Apple welcomes an objective examination of the U.S. corporate tax system, which has not kept pace with the advent of the digital age and the rapidly changing global economy. So basically, Apple's saying, you know, we'll pay if you want, but you got to change things.
I like in the statement how he said, at Apple, we like to do things simple. Let's simplify the tax code. Like, wow. Okay. Tim Cook running for president next?
I taxes.
Let's put a small drop shadow underneath the UX tax code. Let's put a white background. Really, really clean sans serif typography and fix this, folks.
Taxes, they just work.
He loves the tax code because it's not skeuomorphic. So
it's very flat.
Big fan of that.
It is still a book.
Let's talk about, that's true, New York officials going after someone for using Airbnb and running afoul of tenant laws.
Yeah, speaking of laws that don't really make sense, the city of New York's housing board fined Airbnb host Nigel Warren $2,400 in fees for violating a law that makes it illegal for property owners to rent out homes temporarily. That's with, you know, under 30 days. Because it mimics hotel stays. And the city of New York says, well, you can't do that because you're not being regulated and we've got environmental concerns to come up with. And this is a law that was passed in 2011. What's interesting about this is the Airbnb host, Nigel Warren, is actually a tenant. His landlord is somebody else entirely. So this is a condo that he lives in, but he pays rent on. So it would be effectively exactly the same as me renting out my apartment here because I'm not actually the owner. The reason that this law was passed is it was aimed at landlords buying up residential properties and then kind of turning them into hotels. Airbnb has been lobbying legislators to change this law because they're saying, listen, this is obviously that law makes sense, you know, for slumlords who are, you know, putting people up in places that they think are hotels and basically, you know, scamming them out of money. This is not that. This is not for people who turn their homes into hotels. And Airbnb actually got involved in this. They sent a lawyer to the hearing for Warren to argue on his behalf. It's the first time that they've ever actually done this. However, they didn't get anywhere. Nigel Warren initially was ordered to pay something like $7,000 because there were some other regulatory fees and a judge brought it down to $2,400. And he's pretty much said, listen, I mean, it's more of a hassle really at this point than it is, you know, going to drain, you know, all the funds that I've ever had before. But this is not unique to New York. San Francisco, you've got some issues here. You've got housing officials. They're concerned that property owners are going to use Airbnb to get around tenant protections, to get around land use codes. I guess my question for all of you is, Airbnb got involved. They had a lawyer on the case. Airbnb has been very vocal about the fact that this law in New York City specifically, it really should not blanket cover all of these Airbnb hosts, but they couldn't get a judge to reverse his decision. Kevin, is this just sort of become a matter of if you want to use Airbnb, it's a little bit more of a crapshoot, whether or not anyone's going to find out and fine you, or is the business doomed?
I feel like it has to come to a head at some point. I don't think Airbnb would offer New York apartments if the city of New York told them that they can't. I mean, seems like they're butting up against maybe, you know, slightly shades of the definition of landlord, tenant, renter, et cetera. It's just along with Uber, these apps are creating a new space where we used to have in society of special people who did special jobs that the city knew about. Taxi drivers, black car drivers, hotel owners, and they were regulated and the city knew about them and everything was fine. But now there are so many apps that are turning normal people into these like one-time temporary special people. And something is going to have to be done on a wider scale to change how we think about regulation versus like the ease of use that the internet gives us.
I'm actually going to New York in just over a week, and I've got a person that I was going to work with on Airbnb, and I saw this morning, and I contacted them, and I said, what if we took this off of Airbnb? Would that be possible? You know, just so you don't have to get in trouble. And the interesting thing about that is, you know, Airbnb collects fees. You know, there's sort of like a cleaning fee and there's a transaction fee. And you think, I kind of know this person, so it's not that weird. But it's like, Airbnb does offer some form of comfort on both sides. You know, there is a transaction that both parties agree to. And Airbnb has some, we've seen in the past, will assume some liability if a loft gets trashed, that sort of thing. But I wonder how much people who are trying to use the system are going to resort to kind of under the table deals, which isn't necessarily the best idea either.
No.
No, I don't think Airbnb wants that to happen for sure. I mean, they want to work with the cities. They're saying, look, we're a new thing. You need to adjust your regulations to account for this. And we will provide cover and safety and prevent the bad things that this law was originally meant to prevent, but was not written with us in mind because we weren't possible when this law was written.
Exactly.
Well, let's move on to MessageMe getting $10 million in funding and saying it has 5 million users after 75 days. MessageMe, another one of these chat apps like WhatsApp, like WeChat, like Kaiku or Kick. Why are they getting so much money? Why are they getting so many users? Everybody wants an alternative for text messaging. Everybody likes playing around with things like stickers, although in MessageMe's case, they just have a grayed out area for sending money and stickers, saying they'll do that when they get to the monetization stage of their game. Right now, they're just trying to make a simple and easy to use way to share images, drawings, videos, voice recordings, etc. But it does seem like, and I was reading this next web article about this, gaming is where the money is. Line makes $58 million in Q1 of this year off gaming. $30 million last year compared to that, right? So a $28 million increase. Kakao Talk's gaming ecosystem makes $40 million a month. And these chat apps have huge numbers. WhatsApp has 200 million active users. WeChat, 195 million active users. So I'm curious, Kevin, do you think that the way mobile sort of horned in on the gaming scene and changed the dynamic of how games are sold and how much time people spend playing games, could that happen again to mobile itself from within with these chat apps?
I don't know. Have you ever used Kick or any of these other apps?
Yeah. Well, I've used Line and I've used Kakao and I just installed MessageMe.
I used Kick for a while, mostly because I think my wife's text messaging plan was a little threadbare. So I wanted to save from that. And it's just so you have to go this marketing campaign with all your friends to get them to use the same app. And then 3 months later, you're telling them to use a different app. I don't understand the mobile gaming system at all, the ecosystem and how it could make so much money for these very small companies. And I guess you're saying, Tom, that the chat apps are just like kind of a way to get people into the gaming ecosystem, too. Just
well,
as a connector between people.
Saying, we've got, let's say, 200 million active users. Now we give them a little game they can play with their chat buddies inside the app and charge them, you know, some freemium model type stuff.
And SMS just doesn't work for that, I guess. Or, you know, iMessage or Google Hangouts or whatever. They just don't work for that purpose, I guess.
Well, SMS certainly doesn't. Google Hangout doesn't seem to be incorporating games into it, as far as I know.
No, but yeah, no, I it's an amazing world full of teenagers doing things I don't understand, apparently.
That is pretty much how I'm looking at this. And I'm like trying to rack my brain like, okay, what is going to happen next? What is the next Twitter, that I understood at the time? But as time goes on, it's harder and harder to figure this out. Ayaz, do you have any insight on this?
Well, I mean, it just seems like it's mirroring social networking in general, right? You had Facebook, you have these messages going back and forth between your friends in a closed little network. So that worked out nicely. And then eventually these games started showing up and people have the social pressure to play the games, because you can check when your friends are playing or not. So it just seems very similar to when Farmville was on Facebook. So if these companies like MessageMe have very, very involved users and they have a new way to keep people there with gaming, I think that'll work. It just seems like it's the same thing we've seen before. I don't know if it's going to be a monstrous hit, because as we've seen with gaming on social networks, there's backlash to that from some people, including myself. I want to just see what's going on. I don't want to be guilted into, you know, helping somebody's farm go stay afloat. So I'm just kind of curious where this is going to go in the long run, but there's so many competing services that it's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And that is the key. Like, if you have 200 million active users on WhatsApp, if you have 195 million users on WeChat, you have a better chance of finding a friend on there. Those services are popular in other countries, though. I think in the United States particularly, we haven't seen anybody come in and capture the market, which is why MessageMe is probably getting $10 million, because VCs are saying, wow, this might be the app. Sarah, is it a foregone conclusion that one of these apps will rise to the top and we'll all be using it in a few years?
I don't know that that's the case. And you make a good point that it's like 200 million monthly active users. sounds pretty good. But then that's sort of regional still. I mean, you compare that to Facebook, which is very global. That's a good global example. So I think probably what we're going to see is not just that one will rise to the top, but a couple of these companies will merge. So they'll cover more of the earth, you know, than they would individually. And so all of a sudden, you sort of have a stronger conglomerate of messaging apps, because honestly, they all pretty much do the same thing. You know, stickers are hot right now, you know, and you might roll your eyes, but it's like, that's just something that people are using to communicate with each other. So all of these services kind of crop up. They do similar stuff. You might like to design a little bit more than the next, but really it's where all the people are. So if you merge together, you know, if one company acquires another, and it's easy enough to not have to keep moving your friends around to different services, people are lazy. And so that's what's going to end up working out in the end.
Yeah, those numbers that you cited, Tom, they add up to more than the U.S. population. So it definitely seems like international is where one of them could really make an impact. But like Sarah said, it's such a hard nut to crack because there are so many services that are already international messaging capable.
Yeah, a lot of these are getting their users in Japan, in China. They're incredibly popular in Asia and Southeast Asia. And so I'm trying not to do what I did with instant messaging and phone cameras and dismiss it out of hand because I think it's silly and get ahead of the trend because it's coming. It's like a.
By the way, let the record state that I think stickers are super fun.
There you go. The record will show the that Ms. Lane...
Facebook Messenger stickers are very cool and they're all free. But okay, that's all stuff. Right.
What about printing a pizza? That's our randomizer today. This is like the Star Trek freaking replicator. NASA funding research into 3D printed food. The purpose being you could put it on long distance space travel and you would be able to keep the ingredients for longer than you would get to keep prepared food. But you could still print out tastier versions of prepared food, like, for instance, a pizza.
Oh, man, that is my new desktop background, that diagram.
With the inert gas and the pressure-regulated ingredients.
Oh, my God, you can see, like the cheese is just this weird little Kraft Velveeta thing in a pressure tube. It's amazing. Yeah.
The only thing this chart, this graph is missing is an actual pizza at the end.
Yeah.
With little wavy lines coming off of it.
Well, yeah, I think we're one Facebook sticker away from there.
on the rep wrap, they should just have a little pizza just right there. That'd be awesome.
Well, there's that app on Xbox that lets you order a pizza. This should be an attachment at some point.
Laughing Stoic on Twitter, according to this Verge article, said, if someone invents a 3D printer that prints pizza, I'm pretty sure the rules say you win the economy.
Yes.
And what about all the counterfeit Pizza Hut pizzas that'll show up? The counterfeit Domino's ones.
Right.
These are going to be regulated, Tom. These are going to be regulated. So you can't build your own 3D pizza that tastes like DiGiorno's.
I had a friend who worked at Pizza Hut and who can tell you why they dispense the oil out of those pump jars. I think that the 3D printed pizza will work out better, actually.
They print a layer of dough, which is cooked while being printed, then mix tomato powder with water and oil to print the tomato sauce. And then the topping of the pizza is a protein layer.
I'd like some pepperoni, green peppers, a protein sheet.
Extra protein.
I'll have the 12-inch protein layer. Thanks.
Just throw a little water on the fire. Remember, instant coffee was the future in 1950.
Yes. True enough.
And Tang.
We would all be drinking Tang and instant coffee.
let's see what's going to happen in the future on the calendar, sir.
Oh, wonderful. You know, I said yesterday that HP had their earnings report today, but it's actually tomorrow because the future sometimes is hard. But Lotus 1-2-3 is actually going away for reals on September 30th, 2014. You've got a little bit of time to throw Lotus 1-2-3 the best darn retirement party ever.
Yeah. What was the old saying, that DOS ain't done until Lotus 1-2-3 won't run?
DOS is done September 30th, 2014.
Darn right.
Pour a little out for Lotus right there. There wasn't anything in there. Let's see what's incoming.
Much like with Lotus.
That's probably why it's dead. There's nothing to pour out for it. We had a letter from an email from Peter in Ames, Iowa. He says, hey, TNT crew, when you guys were discussing the technology that looks at your face when going to a store and how creepy that might be, I took it a different way. I was thinking that maybe in the future, this program would not only look at your face, but it would see what size your body is and what you're currently wearing. In a clothing store, this sort of thing could pull out selections of clothing you might be interested in right when it sees you walk through the door. Just an idea. Would like to hear your thoughts.
Aw. I like Peter's optimism. They won't use it for evil. They'll use it to help me get better fitting clothing.
Yeah.
Good for you, Peter.
I like the idea of a store telling me that my shirt doesn't fit right. Because it's just like, they're like, do you have one that does?
Yes, exactly. Instead of just being critical, they actually help you. Let's get you a better shirt. Well, that is it for this show. Kevin Purdy, thank you so much. Always great having you on the show, man. I missed having you on.
Yeah, thank you very much. Good day for it.
Of course, you can find Kevin at thepurdman.com. That's thepurdman.com. What else you got going on in beta? Anything else you got you want to plug?
I just covered Google I/O for Fast Company, wrote up a bunch of, a lot of the changes there. I blog at IT World and work on some other projects. So stay tuned.
Check it out. Kevin Purdy, thank you very much. Also, don't forget to check out our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. We look at that to figure out what stories to put in the lineup. The pizza story, I believe, came out of the subreddit today. So go in there and submit stories and vote. Voting on the stories is, if not as important, may possibly more important than submitting the stories, technewstoday.reddit.com. We will be back tomorrow. twit.tv/TNT is where you can find us. Until then, you can give us an email to tnt@twit.tv. Give us a call. Leave us a voicemail, 260-TNT-SHOW. Julio Ojeda Zapata from St. Paul Pioneer Press joins us tomorrow. We'll see you then.